10 years after the passing of Amy Winehouse, her goddaughter and fellow singer-songwriter Dionne Bromfield opens up for the first time in a new documentary, Amy Winehouse and Me, Dionne's Story. I spoke to Dionne a little earlier on and started by asking her how Amy came to be her godmother.
So I was roughly around 6, turning 7, and my mum was like friends with her. And the first time I met her was actually because my mum couldn't get a babysitter for me. So my mum just brought me with her. And I just remember I was at Amy's house, and because I was so young, I just remember Amy being like, would you like some juice, and would you like some food? I've got like some biscuits in the cupboard if you'd like it. And slowly, like, just a relationship started to grow. And I think my mum could see that I was kind of, or Amy was really like on her best behavior when I was around. So I kind of became a little bit of like, a positive influence on her. Amy just kind of turned around to my mum and said, I would love to be her godmother. Well, like, would you allow that? So it wasn't as if I got like baptized and she was there pouring the water over my head or anything like that, but it was more like a verbal confirmation. And yeah, she if I didn't call her Auntie Amy, she would be absolutely vexed with me. So from then it was Auntie Amy.
Over those years from say age 6 to 7 right through up to 15, when tragically of course she died, how did your relationship develop, and what aspects of her personality did you get to see that the public didn't get to see?
It got stronger, really, our relationship. I was very lucky because I always say having Amy was kind of like having a second mum, but also like having a sister, because I could talk to her about things that I just, you know, wouldn't dare say to my mum, like whether it was about there's a boy in my school I like or something, and, you know, she would give me advice on that. And then as I started to like get a liking towards music, she obviously, being a musician herself and like out there doing really well, she kind of really like took me under her wing. So we were just bonding on like all different levels, and I think that's what made it really like unique and strong. I think we really got to like a really huge bonding moment when I was probably about 12-13, when, you know, we would almost speak daily.
We all forget how young she was, of course. She was only in her 20s herself. Did she have hobbies? What kind of things did she do in her spare time?
Yeah, I mean, Amy was incredibly smart. I think people don't realise like how smart she was. She was actually like moved up a year in school because she was so clever. But she used to watch daytime telly, quiz shows. I mean, she was really into that stuff, just normal things, doing girly things. Like, I mean, I was like her human dolly. She loved to like do my hair and my makeup and pluck my eyebrows until there's like no hair left. She was just really into, you know, things that young girls do.
Now, when it emerged that you had a fine singing voice yourself, Dionne, as you moved into your teens, did she help you in terms of being a mentor? Did she try to shield you from some of the pitfalls she may have experienced herself in what is a pretty cutthroat industry?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, she really put me on. And I think the good thing is about having somebody that was kind of had gone through, you know, being signed and all of that stuff, you can look to them and you can speak to them in a way that sometimes people like your management or record label just won't understand because they're not artists. So having someone like Amy where I could call her up and I could say like, Ames, I'm really not feeling something on this song and I just don't want it on the album, she'd be like, cool, I'll sort it out. Or she'd be like, I know what you're feeling, like this is how you deal with it. So it was nice. And it was even nicer because obviously it's a family member, so you know their intentions are, you know, even better.
Now, we all know Amy had a tortured young life, but you were on stage with her in Camden just 3 nights before she died, and that night all seemed well.
Yeah, it was very good. It was a lovely night. You know, I said, if that was if someone told me I could never see them again and this is the last time I could see them, I hope that it's like that, because she was really beaming. She looked super, super good. She was happy, full of energy and talking so positively. It was a really special night.
And then you were in Wales 3 days later when you got the news. Tell us how that impacted you, how you responded, because you were doing a concert yourself that night.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Wales, and like, I'm sure you've been to festivals, but like you get really like you don't get any phone service when you're there. So I remember all of a sudden everyone's phones just started going like crazy. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, what's gone on? But I didn't think anything, and it was about half an hour before I had to go on stage. And I just remember being in the dressing room and everyone just kind of started leaving, and there was a shift the best way to describe it was like it was really sunny outside, and then like a grey cloud just kind of went over. And I was just in the dressing room with it was actually Amy's PA who was working with me that day, and he just started crying. It was just myself and him in the dressing room, and I was like, "What's wrong?" And I don't know why, but something inside of me just made me ask him, "Is it Amy?" And he just said, "Yeah, she's gone." And it kind of just went in one ear and out the other ear. I think I just didn't acknowledge it or register what he'd just said, and I kind of just went into autopilot. And I just remember that my mum and management and everyone was saying, "We're going back down to London, like we're not doing this gig." And I just thought, "No, I'm here now. I've literally got to go on stage. Amy wouldn't want me to be down in the dumps, so like let's just do this gig." And it was like a 45-minute set, and I remember we cut it down to about half an hour, but I just remember just feeling like I was just kind of existing.
And you were only 15. When did the real shock hit you that you'd actually never see her again?
I think about 4 months after she passed, I remember I was watching TV, and it was a comedy, and it was a comedy that she loved, and I went to pick up my phone to call her, and obviously I couldn't, and that's when it kind of just like hit me, and I remember like I had a huge cry to myself. And then I turned really like introverted when it came to talking about Amy. I just shut down completely. I didn't want anyone to talk about her. I didn't want her name mentioned. It was just, we're not talking about this.
And you did go on to record a number of successful albums, and you became a children's TV presenter. But that lingering impact of her loss and the shocking way you heard about it, it did impact on your career. You said you had to pull back out of what you were doing.
You know, I'd seen such a beautiful side to the industry, but I'd also lost someone in the industry. So I'd seen like two ends of it. So I felt like, is this something that I really wanted to do? Also, I kind of felt a little bit like, you know, Amy was one of a few that were my biggest supporters. And when that person who's really championing you is no longer here to do that, sometimes, you know, people start disappearing as well. So I didn't really know where people's intentions were. And I was just not really, the love that I had for something I love so much, which was music and the industry, kind of really evaporated. So it was only till I was about 19, actually, that I ended up in Ronnie Scott's. And bearing in mind, from like 16 to 19, I actually stopped listening to music in total. Like, I didn't really want to even go out of my way to listen to music. I ended up in Ronnie Scott's with a guy I was seeing. And yeah, I just remember like watching a band play, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot imagine doing anything but this. And also, you know, Amy put me on this pedestal to go out there and do what I love. I feel like I owe it to her to at least fulfill it.
So why have you made this documentary now to mark the 10th anniversary of her death, Dionne? Like, some cynics might suggest that you're taking advantage of that anniversary yourself.
They could say that. But for me, it was more of a personal thing. I felt like, one, I've had loads of offers before to do stuff like this in the past, and it just never felt right because I didn't feel comfortable doing it, nor was I actually in a position mentally to go there. It was only really, I'd say November last year, 2020, I really started to start thinking about Amy a lot more, and I did a good job at kind of not thinking about her for about 9 years. And I think 10 is such a big number that I couldn't not think about her. And I always felt like there was a side to her that just was never shown. And people publicly saw the love that we had for each other and how amazing she was, but it was very surface. So I felt like doing something like this to also raise awareness, to show people that, like, you know, people are more than their addictions, whatever. And just to show the Amy that really, that's the only Amy that people should really know about. Everything else that they kind of read and saw in the papers, that was nothing. That was 10% of Amy.
So what can people expect to see in the documentary, Dionne?
So there's some unseen footage. It's actually really funny because when you have to, you know, go back, I forgot a lot of the stuff. And then when I started seeing the stuff that I hadn't seen in ages, I forgot how beautiful some of it is. So there's some like really nice stuff of me and Amy actually in her backyard on the steps talking to camera. That's really lovely. There's also a couple of like photos that I have that's from my like, own personal collection that I've let people see. I go and talk to a few people that were around me at the time that give like a really good insight to what life was really like knowing Amy and being around Amy. So I think there's just a side that hasn't been seen of Amy, and I feel like people will be able to actually see this like really fun, loving, caring Amy.
I suppose it's a hypothetical question, but Do you ever think what she would have been like at age 37, 10 years later, if she was still alive?
I don't know. She might have had one or two wrinkles. Who knows? She probably, I'm sure you would have had music. Who knows? She might have had kids. She was so maternal.
Finally, Dionne, you've been through the ringer yourself over the last 10 years, but are you determined to get back into the music industry now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been doing this from 11, really. So, I mean, I'm rubbish at everything else. I can't tell you. I'm not good at anything else. So this has to work. No, I honestly, I love music so much, and I feel like there's so much more that I can give. And also, you know, I'm sure you yourself, when you were 15 and then when you were 25, you had a big, big learning experience. You're not the same person. And I needed to kind of take that experience of life away from like the public eye. So yeah, I'm really happy and really excited about this next chapter.
It's a funny question, I suppose, but I don't know if you're spiritual yourself, but do you ever feel like your godmother is looking after you?
Oh yeah, she definitely is. She's been there a few times when I'm thinking about certain things, and I'm like, what would Amy say? And then like I get like a subliminal message or something. She's definitely watching over.